Happy Thursday. It's the Bill Buckmaster Show. You should know by now, if you listen to Bill regularly, that he's not in this week. It's Tim Steller here hosting, guest hosting. I'm a Metro columnist with the Arizona Daily Star. Tom Fairbanks is on the dial as usual. The Buckmaster Show broadcasts from the Green Things Zoklo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I'm happy to have here today with me in studio Homer Teal. He is an archaeologist, vice president of the Tucson Presidio Museum, and works for Desert Archaeology. At the bottom of the hour, by the way, I have Deborah North, Master Gardener. We'll talk about the odd time we're in with the hot season is still here, but the end of it is kind of within sight around the corner. But let's start with our first guest here, Homer Teal. So obviously I brought you on because this is a big moment in Presidio history, at least. Can you tell us about what it is that you've been commemorating?
So last week was the 250th anniversary of the selection of the site of the Presidio San Agustin del Tucson by a guy named Hugo O'Connor, an Irishman who was working in the Spanish military. And so we call it the 250 plus celebration because it's 250 years of the founding, but the Native American heritage goes back thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. So this was the establishment, this was the selection of the site of the Presidio?
Yes. O'Connor had been tasked with inspecting all of the Presidio sites from Louisiana to California. And when he got down to Tubac, where there was a fort, he realized it wasn't in a great location. So he came up the Santa Cruz River and selected Tucson because the river, Santa Cruz River, was flowing year-round, and so there was land to grow crops and pasture animals. There was a Native American village at the base of a mountain that could help build the Presidio. Mm-hmm. And the Apache were coming down along the Santa Cruz River to raid into Sonora. And so by establishing a Presidio here, he was helping to stop or slow down that sort of thing.
I see. So Tubac at the time was the big fort, Spanish fort in this area.
Yes, there were about 65 soldiers stationed there.
Yeah, can you imagine just 65 soldiers and how many other people more or less would have been
in the Tubac?
A couple
hundred, maybe.
Yeah, so it's very small. And I want to, if you would, give us a feel for how isolated or frontiersy Tucson was at the founding of the Presidio back in 1775.
So there were, a couple of missions in southern Arizona, one at Tumacacori, Guavavi, but the nearest store was over 100 miles away. So once a month, the soldiers would get on their horses and ride down to Imuris or Arizpe to collect the payroll and to bring back whatever consumer goods they could buy there.
Hmm. So these were the big supply routes or, transportation routes for the Spanish going down to northern Sonora?
Yes, they had they had a road, the Camino Real, that headed down there, and you would get on a horse and maybe you would have a wagon or a cart and head down there, bring stuff back.
Yeah.
Not much, though, because people didn't have a lot of money. The soldiers got paid once a month. Civilians didn't have any cash money.
Wow. So you mentioned the missions that existed. They predated the Presidio here. Did they also establish villages, or was there a European foothold, so to speak, in southern Arizona via these missions?
So the missions were established at existing Native American villages. So Father Kino came up through along the Santa Cruz River in the mid-1690s, and he stopped at San Javier and with Bach, mm-hmm, and established the mission there. And then he headed up north, and at the base of A Mountain, he established another mission, which they eventually called San Agustin.
Wait, so he had there was a mission already here at the time of the Presidio's founding?
Yes, and that was why they wanted to establish a fort here, was because you had a group of Native Americans, mm-hmm, living there already.
But okay, so but that history predates the establishment of the mission, right? The indigenous,
yes,
history here, like the Tohonatam or their ancestors or other people have had a village around Amom for a long time.
We have found evidence going back 4,100 years ago of people living on the floodplain on the west side of the Santa Cruz, And they were growing maize or corn there, which is the oldest known corn here in the American Southwest.
Wow. So they were, I mean, how would those, I referred to this as isolated, and that's obviously true from the European colonist perspective back in that time. I mean, for the people who were indigenous to the area, would it have been, well, obviously it's just their home, but was there a lot of indigenous population around, a lot of settlements, a lot of movement?
Yes, along any of the rivers or creeks, because the Santa Cruz River flowed year-round here, and probably the Rito and the other creeks were also flowing year-round. So agricultural settlements were established there.
So like up and even north of here, up toward, up the Santa Cruz, toward
yes.
the Gila and all
For
that?
For instance, at Ina Road, where the Ina Road sewage plant, my company has done several projects, and we have found layers and layers of villages going back down 17 feet below the ground surface, and there was stuff deeper than that, but that's as far as we had to dig.
Wow. So is it possible? Okay, well, first of all, what kind of stuff did you find in that area?
Because the area had flooded and deposited soil on their agricultural fields, so when we stripped off the area, we could trace out their individual fields and the little canals they dug to irrigate them, and then nearby we find their houses and cooking pits and mm-hmm. storage pits.
Oh, okay. So is it possible to say that these were Tohono O'odham people or their ancestors, or is it not really possible to say what indigenous group it was?
The Tohono O'odham believe that they are their ancestors, mm-hmm. And the archaeologists go along with that.
Yeah, there's no reason to say otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so there have been some events so far. A lot of them are over at this stage, although I understand there's a few more things going to happen. By the way, if you want more information, there's a website, celebratetucson.com. I expect more stuff will be added as events are established in the coming months. But tell us about what you've been doing so far to celebrate, commemorate, or otherwise note the 250th anniversary of the Presidio.
There's been a series of talks by historians that have taken place. Last Saturday was the big celebration where we had a stage set up in the Presidio, and of course the politicians came and spoke, and then they had bagpipers. There's a Hugo O'Connor bagpipe band in Phoenix, and they came down and played.
Oh my goodness.
It all sounds alike to me, though. and then a Tohono O'odham group did
Gertie
work.
And the Teo Boys, if I'm not
yes.
mistaken. Yep.
And she's great.
Yep.
And then there were also booths outside, and there were Chinese lion dancers, and I sat inside with my Lego Presidio church model that I made.
Wait. What is that?
I'm too old to have Legos when I was a child. I had Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs.
I remember those.
But my husband gave me a fake Lego set, and then I got interested in doing Legos, and I decided, hey, I'm going to make a Presidio church based on this, the only drawing we have from 1860, and people loved it, little kids especially.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned Hugo O'Connor. I also was speaking with someone from the Irish Cultural Center, or whatever the group is called, who they refer to him as Hugh O'Connor, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. So basically that was his Spanish version of his Irish name, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So how did this Irishman end up here establishing this, at least choosing the site for this procedure?
So he was Catholic, and you could not be in the English military if you were Catholic. And Spain was Catholic, and they were actually enemies of England at this time, as well as Ireland was pretty pissed off of England too. So they, him and other members of the gentry went to Spain and became officers in the Spanish military. I think when he was in Tucson, he was a lieutenant colonel, and he came up in August, visited the San Pedro River first, and selected a fort site there. That was Terranate, which you can visit. It's on the Bureau of Land Management land.
Oh.
That one only lasted 5 years because the Apaches attacked it frequently and killed over 90 soldiers and two of the commanders.
Wow.
And one day in 1781, they just packed up and left. Tucson wasn't that unlucky.
Yeah.
So he picked this place because there was water. I mean, water is life here in the desert. The groundwater was basically 7 feet below the ground surface on the floodplain. And there was a river flowing through and irrigation canals snaking out from the river with agricultural fields. And there was enough agricultural fields for both the Native Americans, and then each of the soldiers was required to be a farmer as well.
Required?
Yes.
Oh, so that, in other words, they had to raise enough food for themselves maybe?
Yes.
And for the village, as it were.
Then they had huge herds of cattle, sheep, horses, and mules that also were grazing out on the floodplain.
So there must have been an interesting, and maybe that's underplaying it, interaction there between the indigenous people of the different tribes and the Spanish as they tried to establish themselves. Was it a hostile relationship or a kind of cagey one, or how did it work?
So by the time the Presidio was established, the Odom and Pima were allies of the Spaniards. And so for them, it was somewhat of a good thing because they could trade their pottery, fodder, firewood to the Spaniards and get things like cloth, buttons, beads, whatever. In 1792, a group of Apaches came and settled next to the fort. And the premise was that if they settled there and the fort provided them with beef and cloth and agricultural tools, that they would stop raiding and tattletale on their relatives that were still out in the mountains.
Oh, okay.
And then from 1792 to about 1820, there was a period of mostly peaceful time.
1792 to 1820?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a long time.
It was. Because the Apaches would whisper to the military, oh, yeah, that they're going to attack maybe. So the soldiers would go out and prevent that.
So, yeah, we'll be going to a break here shortly, but I wanted to ask a couple more things about this. So I know I've heard reference to Apaches mansos, or
yes.
What's the English version of that?
Tame Apache.
Tame Apaches. Yeah, that's a funny phrase, but that's what you're referring to,
yes,
as people. Okay. So, but there were other Apache people who lived like further east and further north,
yes,
who were not, who were hostile.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why these Tohono O'odham and other people were in part interested in allying with the Spanish to defend themselves against.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So,
yeah.
So they made a kind of military alliance against some,
yes,
of these. Yeah.
Okay. Because the Apache would come down and raid, looking for animals to take or people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Spaniards would do the same, attack Apache villages. So it was a back and forth.
All right. Well, I think we should wrap up this segment, but we'll be back in a minute here at the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on the Bill Buckmaster Show. I have Homer Teal talking about the Tucson Presidio's 250th anniversary.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
We're back here on the Bill Buckmaster Show. Happy Thursday to everyone. I'm not Bill, obviously. I'm Tim Steller with the Arizona Daily Star here in studio with Homer Teal. He's an archaeologist and vice president of the Tucson Presidio Museum, has done a lot of work in the Presidio and other areas around here. And we've been talking about the Presidio because it's the 250th anniversary of its establishment in what is now downtown Tucson. We were talking before the break, or during the break, I should say, about today. Today's August 28th, which is the feast day of San Agustin. Can you tell me about why that's significant in Tucson?
So San Agustin of Hippo, I think he was a Turkish man who was eventually martyred, and he was the patron saint of both the mission at the Base Aphae Mountain and the Presidio. And so August 28th, I believe, was the day he was killed. And during the Presidio period, extending up into the 1890s, there was a celebration that would last one or two, even 3 weeks.
Oh my
gosh. People would get together. They would have an area, a dance area surrounded by booths, and they would have people playing whatever musical instruments they had. And you could gamble in the booths during the territorial period, especially after the railroad got here in 1880. You could have ice cream and whatever beverages you wanted. And it was a big party, and everyone had a good time. Newspapers sometimes talked badly about it because, you know, people were having a good time and drinking too much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've read some of those accounts. There's a funny, you know, obviously George Hand's famous diary. He was the saloon keeper who kept a diary in the late in the 1870s and 80s, if I'm not mistaken. August 30th, that would be 2 days from today, 1878. His entry was, "I was drunk early and late, drunk all day, very drunk, disgustingly drunk. Everyone is drunk." So that may capture some of the spirit of or the atmosphere of the feast, which took place over those days in that year, those years.
When you read George Hand's diary, he makes a point of saying, "I was not drunk today." So
and okay, yeah. So maybe it wasn't that exceptional, but that everyone was drunk was exceptional. Can you tell us? Oh, so I understand that you have found evidence of these feasts in your digs.
So we did the archaeological work prior to the construction of the January 8th Memorial, which is just west of the domed Pima County Courthouse downtown.
Yep.
And in one of the layers down in the Spanish period deposits, we found a layer of sheep skulls. So many, we couldn't believe it. And then mixed in with the sheep skulls, there were peach pits and other plant materials. We have a guy on staff who examines the plant materials. We take dirt, throw it in water, the charred material rises to the surface, and then this guy can look at the charred material and identify them. And it was all crops that are harvested in late August, early September.
Oh.
And so the combination of a large number of sheep skulls, which suggests they were slaughtering a lot of sheep at one time, plus this plant material, we thought was likely that it represents the Feast of San Agustin.
Oh, wow. And so that kind of, I have this sense, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, that a lot of towns in Sonora and in Mexico in general, probably all over Latin America, have a celebration of their town, which is the day of their patron saint's feast.
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of what it was here in Tucson, but it petered out in the 1890s,
yes, I guess. Yes, eventually, for various reasons.
Yeah. It just was not the culture of the town anymore, I guess, after the railroad came through.
Eventually,
and all
the politicians decided to make Tucson nice.
Yeah.
And ruined everything.
Right. I would love to see it now. So, speaking of Tucson being nice and Tucson not being so nice, tell us more, if you would, about life in that, you know, post 1775 period, say going up to Mexican independence in 1821.
So there's a census from 1797. There were 395 people living in Tucson, and about 100 of those were soldiers. If you were a soldier, you signed up for 10 years service.
Oof.
Your enlistment document has a physical description of you, tells how big your nose was, that sort of thing, whether you're Roman Catholic. None of the soldiers could read or write. So
how big your nose was?
Yes, they would talk about big nose, small nose, whether you had facial hair, what color eyes you had. The soldiers signed with an X because none of them could read or write. After 10 years, you were allowed to go on break, and then you would immediately re-enlist because it was the only job that paid, and it was the only way you could get cash. If you were injured in service, you were given a pension. And then many of the soldiers retired and stayed here in Tucson. And there are probably thousands of people here in Tucson descended from Presidio soldiers.
Yeah, I was reading about, like, for example, the Sosa family.
Yes.
The Elias is obviously our famous local family.
So if you were a woman, you would get married maybe 15 or 16 and then start having kids every 2 years. You could expect half of your kids at least to die of childhood from diseases. Mm-hmm. They had epidemics of smallpox, measles, cholera, dysentery come through.
Yeah.
And you were in charge of the household. The men and the boys were out in the fields growing crops or herding the animals. The women had to go outside the main gate of the Presidio and wash clothes on rocks while the guarded by soldiers.
In
case the Apache came.
Yeah.
And the average lifespan would have been in your 50s if you survived childhood.
Oh, so you and I would either be dead or
we would
to
be
die.
In the Presidio Cemetery.
Yeah.
Which is underneath Alameda Street in front of the courthouse.
Yeah. Wow. And how violent was it? Was it constantly full of violence, either people attacking from the outside or people fighting on the inside?
So we know that I think there were about 80 times the Apache came to visit Tucson in raids, mostly between 1776, 1792. And then after the Mexican government took over in 1821, they stopped subsidizing the peaceful Apaches that were settled there, and many of them went back to live out in the mountains. And the Apache attacks became very violent at that time. And by 1848, Tucson was the only Mexican settlement left in Arizona. All the other places had been abandoned.
Wow. And those were hard years, I imagine, if
yes.
they weren't being subsidized. I mean, people were basically living a subsistence life here,
yes.
right?
Yeah, there was a case of 17 soldiers being killed in the Mustang Mountains southeast. They were heading down to get the payroll, and they were ambushed. And we have letters from the widows asking for a pension because they were starving.
Oh, my goodness. So what are some of the... So up to 1820, you were saying there was a period of relative peace, and then...
Yeah.
Post 1820, post independence of Mexico, no money left, and then finally in 1854, the United States officially becomes the holder of.
Yes.
But it's interesting, both when the United States took over and when the Spanish showed up. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was a delay in them actually kind of taking possession of
yes.
their new...
The Mexican military left Tucson in March of 1856.
Oh.
A year and a half or so after the Gadsden Purchase.
Oh, wow. And also, if I'm not mistaken, when Hugo O'Connor, he established this site, he said, let's do it here. It's not like the Spaniards just marched up the river.
No.
And
how long did that take? October of 1776.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So
Wait.
It was a year later.
So it was more than a year
that
they waited to kind of... So, I mean, the reason I'm asking these questions is just, it's so interesting how hard the distances were, how slow things moved. I mean, for people who lived here at the time, it was a whole different conception of time, I can imagine.
If you were a woman living in the Tucson Presidio, you might have gone down to visit San Javier once, 9 miles south, but that was probably it. Otherwise, you just stayed inside the fort.
Ugh, yeah. That's a tough life. Yeah. Tell me more, if you would, about some of the finds you've had at in the digs here locally in the Presidio.
Well, we found the walls, the corner tower. We found large areas of trash. We found a house that had a corner fireplace, so we know that that was there. From the trash, we know that they were trading with the local Native Americans for pottery. And they had a special kind of dish called mayolica from Mexico City that was brightly colored. And that was the dish that they served their food on, because that meant you were a proper Spanish or Mexican family.
Oh, the fancy dishware.
Yeah.
Wait, where was it made?
Mexico City area.
Oh, okay. And then also, I know from my colleague Henry's reporting, there's even dishes from further afield
that
you found.
Yes, there's Chinese porcelain that would come from China to the Philippines to the west coast of Mexico, and then by, you know, mule back here to Tucson.
Well, we're going to have to wrap this up in a second. I really want to thank you, Homer Teal. It's the 250th anniversary of the establishment of the Presidio. And, of course, the museum is open. How often is it open?
Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 to 3, I think.
Okay. Downtown, what's the address?
196 North Court Avenue.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Homer Teal.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. It's Tim Steller here in studio. Bill's on another well-deserved break. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Okolo Village studio. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to Zocalo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Well, speaking of green things and gardens, we have Deborah North here in the studio with us, Master Gardener. You work with Pima County Extension, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pima County Cooperative Extension.
Right? Yep, Pima County Cooperative Extension. We've been on together here before, about a year ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe.
Yeah, it feels like it was the same season where we were like just about fed up with the heat and begging for something different. Of course, we didn't get it last year. How long did it take us till we came out of the heat last year?
I think it was November 15th, and then we went right into a freeze.
Oh, right. I forgot about
that.
Remember that? Yeah.
It was like hot and then freezing. It's crazy.
You know, I love to talk weather. You know, I remember specifically one piece of data from October last year, which is that we had record high temperatures on most of the days. I think it was 16 out of 31 days in October last year.
The things I don't want to remember.
Right. Yeah. Let's hope for not having a repeat this year. So it's a weird season, or at least I think of it that way, because it is kind of that late Tucson summer where we know it's going to be over 100 for, you know, off and on for some weeks. It's going to be hot, but the mornings maybe will get a little cooler in two or three, 4 weeks. What should we be doing? Let's start with, let's say, a flower garden. What should we be thinking? Or flower or landscape? You know, what are the kinds of things we should be doing this time of year? You can go into food garden too, if you wish.
There you go. It's a little bit too early to do seedlings, right? Uh-huh. We don't, because it's still too hot during the day. We're really looking for when the temperature, right now we're looking at temperatures at night down in the 70s, mid to high 70s.
Yeah.
That's a good indicator, which is great. Temperature is not quite as hot in the daytime. But really, for the winter crop of flowers, you want nighttime temperatures around 55. And we definitely want to have broken the 100 degree mark for good. But you can start putting out seeds right now. So marigolds are always a go-to. You know, that you can. They're very inexpensive. They do great things in the garden. Mm-hmm. They help keep pests away. They attract the spider mites away from other plants, but they keep rooting on nematodes away. They're just a fantastic, fantastic plant.
So now's a good time to spread those seeds.
Start putting those seeds out.
Okay.
That would you want French marigolds because they have the most of what is a chemical exudate out of the roots and above ground. So unfortunately, the Spanish or the hybrids are not as great for the garden still. And then once you plant them, you can collect the seeds easily and never have to buy seeds again.
Oh wow, that's great!
Yeah. They're fabulous, fabulous.
You know, I always mix in my mind, I'm just silly, I always mix up the words marigold and chrysanthemum, but I know I have a chrysanthemum that's doing, it's just done great in the front yard. Is that
nice?
Is that, it's
that's
not
a fall effect, flower.
It's like, it's not been affected, but it hasn't been flowering, but it's been growing and it's
it
been
will.
Doing, yeah.
It will.
Yeah, it will flower soon.
Yep.
Let's go into the food crops. What can we be doing in a food garden?
Again, you're going to be wanting to do seeds, and we're heading into the best vegetable and herb growing part of the year for us. You can start, think about the root crops. Mm-hmm. So things like beets, if you're of a mind, good time to put in things like onion, garlic is coming up. It's a little early for them, but just around the corner. You want the leafy crops. So things like leaf lettuce, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, broccoli. If you want a good Brussels sprout crop, you've got to start early.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's interesting. You can almost do better with them in Phoenix than here. It's kind of counterintuitive.
Because of the way the cold comes in here?
Don't quite understand it.
Huh.
It's just, it's a weird, but if you want to get them, you got to get them in early.
But again, we're talking about seeds this time
seeds.
Of year.
Seeds, yep.
Not plants.
It's a little early for seedlings.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're really anxious, get the seeds started either indoors or, you know, a lot of the winter crops, that's what I'm talking about. They are best if you seed them outside.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to start seedlings and move them out. So here's the deal. Free seeds, Pima County Library System.
Oh.
Virtually, well, every one of the branches, you can get free 10 packets of free seeds every month using your library card. And you of course, don't have to return them. There is a due date.
You kind of could, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what they do would like is that if you grow the plant and allow it to go to seed, bring seeds back in, and then you become a part of the story of the seeds.
Yeah.
Great thing about those seeds at the library, it says somebody grew it here in the valley.
Oh, really?
So if they don't work for you, it means it's you, not the seed.
Oh, man. I don't like that kind of pressure. So I, even now, I feel nervous about planting seeds for like leafy greens, even thick leaves like, kale or that kind of thing, just because I feel like once those seedlings come up, they're going to get hit by that 105 degree sun and just wilt.
They could.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
the risk you take. Yeah,
that's the risk you take, and that's another reason for doing seeds. Mm-hmm. They're much less expensive than buying seedlings.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
and you put less into them than you would have seedlings if you started them indoors. So you could keep doing it. We call it succession planting. You know, and
what does
you
hope that mean
for timing?
What does that mean, succession planting?
It just means that you don't plant everything at one time because you don't want to harvest at one time.
Oh, okay.
So if you're harvesting something, replace it. Or if you're doing lettuces, do some now, do some in a week, and so on, just like that. You just are planting in an ongoing way as opposed to once.
Well, I was just showing you pictures of my struggling tangerine tree, which you have grimaced at, and I grimaced at it too. But let's not talk about that specifically, but citrus in general is, this is an important moment in the year, correct? This weekend or this coming week or so?
Well, Labor Day is a big deal for limes and lemons. This is the third feeding of the year that you do now. For what they call the sweet fruit, you should have finished by May. That would include grapefruit, oranges, tangerines, etc. But if you haven't fed them that third feeding, you should also feed them now.
Mm.
The reason you feed them earlier on that third feeding is so that they have time to sugar up. Limes and lemons, you want really tart, so you do the last feeding this coming weekend.
Oh, I see. So by feeding the sweet ones earlier, they have more time to build up the sugar.
Sugar.
Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
I didn't know that. I have lemons and tangerines in my backyard, and I've been feeding them all at the same time.
For years, that was the advice, and then Dr. Glenn Wright in Yuma, he did a lot of research, and that's what he came up with, that you'll have sweeter fruit if you finish in May on those, you know, on the ones you want sweet, and then Labor Day for those you want tart.
But in both cases, you should do three before you end for the year. Yeah, that's
yeah. So don't panic. If you haven't done that third one, feed them all.
Do it. Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We've had pretty good luck with those tangerines just doing it that way. So
that's nice.
Hopefully we'll be able to bring that one back. So broadly speaking, we have a climate that is getting warmer, and we've had a monsoon that is at best unpredictable, and this year quite dry. I mean, what does that mean for our, we should be thinking about, maybe not in this exact moment, but over the long term in terms of how we landscape, what we plant, you know, what should we be thinking about with a warming climate?
Well, you know, it's critical that we really ask ourselves, what resources do we want to put into what we're getting out of them? What I mean is that if we're planting non-natives, really importing plants from other parts of the country, and they're not doing well, and they need more and more water, more and more fertilizer, you know, there are always native options. Right? They may not look the same, may not be the same green, but you can get the full spectrum of colors of plants and textures of varieties using native and near native, those that are much more adapted. I grow citrus, and I'm really concerned because they're not doing well. We see every time I'm in plant clinic, and I think every day anybody else is working the plant clinic at the extension, we're seeing citrus issues. And
oh,
it's,
really?
I don't know that they can keep up with their water needs, right? It's just so, so dry.
Well,
it wasn't just this summer. The winter was horrible.
Yeah.
And it's just not getting better, and the summers are getting longer. So...
Yeah, I'm relieved to hear that, because I've been worried about this tangerine tree that I have, and how I just can't seem to catch up to its needs.
Right.
It's been dying back a little bit. And, you know, in previous years, it's done really well. So, it might be one of those things where either we need to, like, start covering them, maybe. Is that an option?
You know, you could try some sort of shade covering if you are willing to invest in that. You know, if it's a tangerine, you could buy at the store.
Think about using that.
Your resources.
You know, that's a good point. I've
moved to planting fruit trees that I cannot get the fruit at the store. You know, it's a type of a fruit, a specific variety that can't be transported or that farmers can't make a profit of. So, you know, things like kumquats, particular peaches that are very soft-skinned.
Yeah.
That they can't get to market. And that's what I'm putting my money and water and time into, is growing things like that.
That's funny, because I have a perfect counterexample for that, which is a pineapple guava, which I discovered on the shelf of a Lowe's on clearance. This was like 3 years ago for like $5 or $10. And I planted it. What the heck, you know?
Yeah.
And it almost didn't make it one summer because I didn't cover it, but I've now covered it with a little poles and a shade cloth across the top, and I water it every day, and now it's up to like 2 feet or maybe a little more, and I keep thinking one of these years it's really going to take off, but that's kind of a lost cause in a way, isn't it?
So you said it's a pineapple or a strawberry guava?
They call it a pineapple guava. Yeah.
So the pineapple strawberry guavas, they're delightful plants. They really are, but they don't set fruit here very well.
Right.
But the thing is, the flowers are fully edible, and they're delightful. There's a pineapple guava plant in a public location in Tucson, which I will not disclose, that if you happen to be walking by, the flowers are very tasty.
Real quick, I mean, this is very down in the weeds, so to speak, but if you were to plant a couple of those trees together, would that then mean that they could be pollinated? No, that doesn't.
No,
still
it doesn't
work
increase their
way.
Pollination. Yeah. And really, their limiting factor is not our heat, but it's our lack of moisture and cold. We can freeze them down hard.
All right, Tom, we should be getting to our last break here. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Tim Steller here with Deb North, Pima County Master Gardener.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
We're back on the Bill Buckmaster Show. Bill, as you know, probably is still out. Tim Steller here from the Arizona Daily Star. I'm with Deborah North, Pima County Cooperative Extension Master Gardener. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you by Silver City. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, makes an enchanting getaway just 3 hours east of Tucson. Start your planning now for a great visit to Silver City by checking out their website at southwestnewmexico.org. All right, back with Deb North. Now, I mentioned to you an interest of mine because the reason it's an interest is because I've heard about it, but I haven't really dabbled in it, which is purslane, a.k.a. verdolagas. It's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So purslane is the English common name?
Yeah. It's the English common name in the Hispanic culture. It's verdolagas,
uh-huh.
And it's a mainstay in cuisine.
What
it's
do you mean?
Sort of new to us.
Well, what is it?
Well, it's an interesting thing because I teach classes on weeds, and this is one of those plants that many people consider a weed. Others consider kind of essential to their cuisine, and they grow it on purpose. And one of the really interesting things about once you have verdolagas, you have them.
Oh, really?
Yes. They reproduce from virtually every part of the plant, right? So seed, if you leave a little bit of the plant in the soil, it can dehydrate and stay in the soil until the conditions are right for it to germinate and grow again. It's a very interesting plant. It's really hardy. And it's very rich in specific nutrients. I can't really speak to the nutrients. I'm not a nutritionist, but it's very nutritious and kind of refreshing, although some people think it's a little like okra.
Oh.
In the texture, huh. You know, that kind of mucilaginous texture.
Oh yeah, mucilaginous. That's a good word. What's the flavor like?
It's a little bit, I would say it almost is a little citrusy, mm-hmm. in its tanginess.
Oh, tangy, nice.
And maybe a tiny bit on the salty. Very, it's mm-hmm. not very salty, but
you can
tell it. Yeah.
And you just eat the leaves, right? Or can you eat the entire plant if you want?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah. The reason this came to mind is I was out walking the dog this morning, and the dog was taking one of its many little breaks, and I looked down at my feet, and there was a plant. I said to myself, "I think I know that plant."
Yeah.
And it was one of them. Now, They grow all over the place.
But, everywhere.
Yeah, but you can also plant them. Do you just grab a piece of a plant you see and throw it in the ground?
Literally, you can do that.
Okay.
You could take a leaf. You could take a piece of a stem. If you see them where they've flowered and they have seeds, the seeds are going to go.
And do they need frequent watering, or can you kind of let them
go? Not really.
Yeah, oh, I have
just
a perfect
to germinate,
place.
So.
I have a perfect place for this. I can't wait to go back to that park and grab a piece of that plant.
And they are a great kind of ground cover because they spread. And then the birds will help you spread them further.
That's what I should have planted. I have a vegetable garden that I let go dormant this summer, and I should have planted that there next summer.
Next summer. So here's a hint. You can do cover crops if you don't want to plant something that's intensive to work on. One of the great cover crops you can use in the summer here are peanuts.
Oh.
People don't think about peanuts, but they grow really well here. In fact, the Benedictine monastery, the nuns, they used to grow peanuts as a cash crop years ago. And
over here on Country Club?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was years ago they used to do that and sell them for profit and support the monastery. But anyway, yeah, you can just buy, you have to buy raw, organic, unsalted peanuts. Mm. And you can either do it in the shell or not, or shelled.
Wait, you mean just buy peanuts from the store and just throw them in the ground?
Yeah, but they do need to be organic.
Raw, organic, unsalted, so not roasted.
No, not roasted. Yeah. And the reason for the raw, or I'm sorry, the organic, is sometimes peanuts are sprayed so they don't germinate.
Yeah, okay. So. Hey, I don't want you to leave before telling us about your upcoming events.
Oh, thank you very much for asking. Yeah. Yeah, we are about to launch, I think it's our 32nd season of in-person free talks at 12 libraries around the county. That they start next month. They go through May. We have, I think, about 115 talks scheduled. And they're coming to a library near you, I'm sure. So check our website for that. And then on Monday night at 5 on Zoom, we have our monthly What to Do in the Garden this month.
So you said check our website. What website is that?
That is just Google Pima County Master Gardeners. You'll get to our homepage, and there's an events button.
Wonderful.
And there's also a plant clinic button. If you have questions, send us photographs and questions.
All right. I'm taking advantage of that. Pruning. This is a great time of year to go snapping branches off, right?
No. Oh. The only ones you want to prune right now are dead or damaged. So if you have damage from a monsoon or it's become dangerous, those need to go. But we are still too hot. So especially things like citrus that are very delicate, roses, this is... All you want to do is remove whatever is dead. That's it.
And so when do you start, or what is the sign that it's a good time?
So if it's a deciduous plant, meaning it loses its leaves, you want to wait until it's lost all of its leaves. That would be roses, most fruit, you know, deciduous fruit trees. Citrus, you want to wait until March 15th or later next year. You want them to have as much coverage as they can getting through the winter, because really it's our cold that is the limiting issue for citrus.
Oh, okay. Speaking of trees, is this a good time to plant trees? I mean, I know there's not necessarily a bad time, but is this a better time coming up?
I would wait till the middle of September, and then deciduous trees, meaning those trees that go dormant in the winter, it's a great time to plant them. They have some nice warm soil, start getting the roots settled. Citrus, you could either plant in fall or spring. Mm-hmm. I personally prefer spring because then I don't have to protect them over the winter.
Yeah. So, what are your favorite trees these days for considering climate change and our Tucson conditions? For shade or just, you know, not fruit or anything like that. Yeah.
Well, I love the desert willow. Mm. It's a beautiful flowering plant. It's fully deciduous. It loses its leaves. So if you plant it sort of south and west sides of the houses, you get shade in the summer and the beauty of the tree, but you also get that solar collection in the winter when you need that. And they can grow very large. And I think Tucson, the trees for Tucson through DEP, mm-hmm. I believe they're on the list of tree options there. Yep. The other one I'm really enamored of right now is the desert ironwood, the Olnia tessuta. I didn't realize until recently it helps support 500 species of insects and animals in the Sonoran Desert.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a shrinking population, but it is really adapted to the hottest parts of our desert. So that's the desert ironwood, and it's absolutely spectacular.
Does that one take a lot? That's a pretty slow grower,
it's
right?
It's a slow grower, so if you're going to plant it now.
Yeah. Right. Planting a tree is an investment in the future.
That's right.
All right. And one quick question about mesquites before we head out. Are they deciduous? Because they go dormant?
You know, they're interesting.
And we just have a couple of seconds.
Yeah, that's all right. Some are fully deciduous and some are part. So they're a great plant tree to plant now, but don't do the Chilean.
Okay.
Do the native.
Got it. Thank you, Deb North, Pima County Master Gardener. It's been the Bill Buckmaster Show.